everyone. I'm your host, Annie Watson, and welcome back to another episode of R is for Rare. I have not said that intro since August, and it is so nice to finally be back and into R is for Rare as much as I possibly can. Sorry I've been gone since August. It is January 6th as I'm releasing this episode. I know I can be way better, but first semester of senior year, being back in person for 5 days a week versus a hybrid model my junior year, huge shock to the system. And because of it, I've been incredibly busy. I've had college apps. I led a senior retreat. I was visiting my sister out of the country for Thanksgiving. I had COVID the last couple weeks of December. It's been an interesting first semester. I'm doing a whole bonus episode coming out on Monday, January 10th. So make sure you subscribe so you can hear why I've been gone and where this podcast is going. But I will be uploading episodes. My goal is to do up 2 episodes a month on Thursdays. That's just as my starting goal. For January, I pretty much have episodes lined up for every single week. But as I get into my second semester extracurriculars, that might change. So the goal baseline is two episodes a month each on Thursdays. So yeah, just a little guideline. But today's episode is my part of the collab I did with the Rare Disorder podcast hosted by Shivani Vyas. She's actually my age. She and I are both high school seniors and rare disease podcasters. She and I kind of started our podcast around the same time. And here is a little bit about Shivani. Shivani is a high school student and founder and host of the Rare Disorder podcast, a podcast dedicated to spreading awareness for rare diseases and elevating the voices of those affected by them. Her personal connection to the community traces back to her grandmother, who was affected by a rare pancreatic cancer. Shivani started the Rare Disorder podcast in March 2020, and today she cross-podcasts, speaks at conferences, involves herself in research, and advocates for legislation through young adults for RDLA, Rare Disease Legislative Advocates, to pay tribute to her grandmother, true rising star in our community. Outside of school, Shivani loves to spend time with friends, hike, explore the outdoors, and volunteer in her community. She hopes to study public health, public policy, and or neuroscience in college next year. So Shivani is amazing. She is just so inspirational, even to me, even though she and I are literally the same age. I do not know how she does it. Both having a full-on podcast in order to honor her grandmother, who did actually pass away from this rare pancreatic cancer, and even just all the extracurricular she does, and she's incredibly smart and gifted, and she knows so much about the rare disease space for not even having a rare disease. She's incredible. She and I talk a lot about rare disease treatments and locations regarding rare disease treatments and how, like, that whole dilemma of needing to travel across borders. She and I talk about Instagram a lot and how it's kind of a unifying force and the educational side of it. We talk about elderly people for a little bit. It was really fun to talk about old people. We talk about that and a lot more. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. And be sure to subscribe to R is for Rare on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to subscribe to the Rare Disorder podcast, Shivani's podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow her and me on Instagram. Our Instagrams will be in the show notes below. Without further ado, let's get into the episode.
Hi, Shivani. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It is weird doing this on a school night, but I am okay with it.
Yeah,
going back to school is weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, especially as a senior, college apps, homework, and, like, just getting back into routine, it's so different, like, after online learning and all that.
Yeah, it's the senioritis kicked in on day one. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah, same.
For sure. So, Shivani, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you're doing with your life right now, your connection to the rare disease community, and a fun fact about yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so first of all, I'd really like to thank you, Annie, for inviting me today. I'm so excited to be here. I know we've been planning this for so long, like a collaboration between us, and I'm so excited because finally, like, the two podcasts in the rare disease community are coming together.
Of course, anytime. You're welcome here anytime.
All right, so just like a brief introduction on myself, I'm Shivani. I'm a high school senior in Alpharetta, Georgia. So right now, as Annie said, I'm just finishing up my last year of high school as a senior. And in school, I'm really deeply engaged with like different clubs and also with my community. And overall, I've just always had a love for learning, whether that's like science, math, whatever. And especially since with this podcast, I get to learn so much about like different rare conditions. It's been a really great experience so far. And so just some fun facts about myself. I really love hiking and Pilates. I'm really into like health and wellness, routines, stuff like that. It's always been like a really big passion of mine. I grew up like in a really, in a family that's really focused on this type of stuff, like overall well-being and stuff like that. So I would say that has definitely influenced my interest in this area. I love traveling the world. I love seeing new places, hanging out with my friends and family. I love dogs. I recently got a new German Shepherd named Tiger. He's just like 8 weeks old now. So, that's been a really great experience. And I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan. All my Swifties out there.
Yes.
Yes.
I love her.
I know, right? Such a queen. All right. And then academic wise, I'm really interested in like public health and policy. My interests have definitely shifted since I've started this podcast. I was originally really like leaning towards medicine, but through learning about like rare disease legislation, public health issues that rare disease patients face, and really getting into the legislative side of like rare disease advocacy through like RDLA, Every Life Foundation, stuff like that. I've really been interested in like policy making, stuff like that. So I'm hoping to do something with that in the future.
That's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know you're really interested in like policy too, so.
It's definitely the rare disease effect.
Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely. Sure. And then so my association with the rare disease community is kind of unique because I don't have a rare disease or condition myself, but I have a personal connection to this community. So I lost my grandmother to like a really rare pancreatic cancer when I was really young, and she was like really important to me. I spent a lot of time with her. And it was just, like, a really tragic, like, event for me. And I can really, like, recollect the different struggles my family went through, like, of having to find the cause, different resources. And also, like, with the overwhelming amount of treatment options, it was just a really difficult time for my family. And especially since her condition was so rare, doctors didn't really like know much about it, and we were just really overwhelmed with all this information coming our way. And this experience like really jolted me to think about like why should it be this way, and then from here I really began to research and learn more about the rare disease community. And through this research, I discovered the rare disease community on Instagram, and I really found that the situation of many patients that are dealing with rare disorders was really no different from my grandmother's experience, and I really wanted to help change that. So yeah, that's just kind of a bit about myself and how I got into the rare disease community and interested in this type of stuff.
That's awesome. You definitely were very comprehensive, so thank you. But can you tell us a little bit more about that experience with your grandmother and how, I mean, I don't know exactly how young you were, but losing a loved one at a young age is not easy, speaking from experience as well. But what was that like trying to wrap your young little mind around the rare disease experience?
Yeah, so I was actually pretty young when this happened. So when I really started like becoming interested in like immersing myself in this community, I was a little bit older. So I don't really recall like exact situations and stuff like that. But I know my family like really described this experience to me and how I spent a lot of time with her as a child because sometimes like I would stay at her house for like a couple months and stuff because my parents would be super busy, so they would let me stay at her house, and I was just really close to her overall. So this is why this was such like an impactful event in my life, and it was really hard to cope with and stuff like that. I know my dad always tells me this, but when I stayed with her like for a couple months, I was coming back from the airport and I kept saying her name, and I like didn't even recognize my parents because I was so young and I was so attached to her. So yeah, that's like really what made me step into advocacy and really decide that I wanted to make an impact on people's lives and make sure that like no one has to go through the same thing I went through.
That's amazing. There's something about grandmamas that just like they have superpowers. I don't know what it is, but grandmas are just chef's kiss. Like it's the it factor of being a grandma. I don't know what it is. Every grandma has it, whether they know it or not. But there's something about grandmas that is just universally awesome. I don't know if it's just the fact that they're embracing their grandkids or if it's just something that like the secret grandma club of the world talks about, but something about grandmas is just the best thing ever.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and they're just like so caring, and just like elderly people in general, like all the elderly people I've come across are so sweet. Outside of like my podcast and just as an extracurricular, I actually like have this organization which is like dedicated to volunteering at elderly homes, and basically what we do is we arrange students from different high schools to volunteer at these elderly homes, and we host these like different events that show that we care about the elderly. Just an example, so like during COVID we obviously couldn't visit the homes in person. So I helped organize this like cards event around Valentine's Day where we wrote like over like, I think it was over 300 cards, like as an organization, of students from like all these high schools across Georgia. And we wrote these cards to the elderly. And I just think it's a really great way to show that we care about them. And, while they're like really savoring their last years, it's just really important to be surrounded by like things they enjoy and also spending time with their loved ones.
I love old people. They're awesome. It's something about the vibe of just how, I know everyone's like old people are wise, but they really are. Mm-hmm. And they've been through so much. And I mean, just think back of like the history of the 21st century. Mm-hmm. They lived through that, whether they were involved as like a veteran or not. Like they have some fun experiences, and also they're not afraid. I've learned they're not afraid to talk about the fun times that they had. Usually, people are like, "Oh, grandparents are going to be super strict and obedient and not want to talk about partying." And like they partied when they were 18. Uh-huh. Like they had a fun time, and it was cheaper back then too. Mm-hmm. I remember one of my best friends growing up, they're, like, this family, like, we've known them for forever, so I would, like kind of, like, steal the grandparents from this family, and, because my grandparents would be, like, I have, like, six cousins on my, dad's side, so they would be very involved, helping with my aunt, so I would kind of, like, snag grandparents that we knew really well, and he talked about how a steak dinner was 5 cents when he was in like fifth grade, because it was like in fifth grade when this happened. Mm-hmm. And he talked about like all the fun drive-in movies, like the stereotypical things you think of from like the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
They lived through that. Mm-hmm. And they get to know, they know all about like dating and the really, what I love the most about elderly people is the ones who have, like, been married for, like, forever, and they share their secrets about marriage.
Yeah, or they're like, this was my, like, high school sweetheart, or whatever.
Yes, it is the most precious thing, because they didn't have the technology we have today. Uh-huh. They didn't use Tinder in the 50s. They did it through the jukebox, so, I mean, like, they had their own little secret ways of falling in love, but they spill all their dating and marriage secrets, and it is the purest thing ever. I love it.
Yeah, and I feel like all their experiences are just, like, so unique, and, like, you can't find them anywhere else because they, as you said, they didn't have, like, TVs, iPhones, iPads, all the technology we have today. So they weren't, like, glued to their phones and, like, computers and stuff like that. They, like, really had to find a way to, like, have fun experiences. And I just feel like it's just such a different perspective than what we would hear today from adults today.
For sure. 100%. So Shivani, what is the most interesting aspect of rare diseases to you as someone who doesn't have a rare disease?
Yeah, so I could say, like, multiple things for this one, so I'm just going to touch on a couple of them. So the first thing is, as I said earlier, I'm really an avid learner, and I love learning about, like, new things, new advancements, new trends, stuff like that. So the first thing would definitely be, like, learning about these new conditions that I've really never heard of before, because it's just, like, such an interesting experience to, like, learn about all these new conditions, and especially since, like, they're so rare. Like, I know one patient I interviewed before, she's, like, one of 50 people to have this condition in the world, so, like, no one knows about it. So I just think, like, learning something new every day, and also through my Instagram, I learn something new every day because I go on my, like, Instagram page, and whether it's, like, some piece of legislation, some new facts about a condition I didn't know about before, knowing that, like, August is an awareness month for a rare condition, I just feel like it's always a learning journey, and every day I'm learning new things on this advocacy journey.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And honestly, I feel like Instagram is, like, the best, like, as, like, young adults, it's the best place for us and for other young adults, and even, like, millennials and, like, people like my parents' age, like, to understand what rare disease life is like,
mm-hmm.
especially for parents who are in, like, their 30s, 40s, 50s, because more often than not, kids are getting these things,
mm-hmm.
And are being diagnosed with these conditions,
mm-hmm.
Which, that's hard. That's hard to see your child go through that. Not that I have a kid of my own, I don't, but I know, like, a lot of parents go through that, and
mm-hmm.
Instagram is unifying, and it's great. Facebook, it works as well. I've heard that sometimes Facebook groups can go a little bit too far,
mm-hmm.
but I've heard Instagram is, like, the unifying force of the rare disease community, and I am fine with that. I love it so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then...
Sorry, there's a giant thunderstorm going on right now, so I apologize if you can hear that.
Yeah, and then, so, like, another interesting thing that, another interesting aspect as someone who isn't a rare patient would really be, like, seeing these, like, different trends and patterns among patients I've interviewed, because as I've interviewed a really large number of patients, over time, you can really see some, like, repetitions of what struggles they're facing, even some experiences. So, yeah, just, like, seeing these trends. So, like, just one thing in specific, one thing I noticed, like, looking at it from a public health point of view is that many patients I've interviewed in the past have shared, like, how they have to travel across state lines or even hundreds of miles to visit a specific doctor that specializes in their condition and really meets their needs, especially because sometimes there are no doctors, like, in their area to treat their specific condition, or just, like, they feel like the doctor doesn't meet their needs. Because I think one of the most important things as a rare disease patient is to really find a doctor that understands you and is patient with you throughout the whole process, while also being knowledgeable on your rare condition. And I really, like, think this trend of, like, having to travel across state lines to see a doctor really raises the issue of, like, health equity in our country, because I know there was, like, a patient I was talking to a couple weeks ago. She would be like, yeah, I would be having, like, a 911 emergency, and I would have to travel, like, to the next state to see my doctor, which I think is, like, crazy, and like we really need to solve this problem. So yeah, that's one thing. And then another thing I've noticed is that like I actually discovered this through Every Life Foundation, their YAR program. So a lot of rare diseases don't have ICD codes, and this is another pattern I've noticed among patients I've interviewed. They're like, yeah, my rare condition doesn't have an ICD code. And this is just like really like, I feel like this is a huge problem because ICD codes are like what the doctors use to write down like what condition this patient has, what treatment options are available. So if they're not able to like note down the condition, I feel like they won't really be making progress in that space.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've never heard of ICD codes. That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And also with your point earlier, sadly, like location, location shouldn't matter. And from experience, like I have been to Indiana a lot anyways because I have family there, mm-hmm. but like missing school because the nearest doctor's in the middle of nowhere in Indiana, it sucks. It's hard to explain. And I mean, it was associated through like University of Chicago, but uh-huh. like they had to have an office in Indiana. I'm like, makes no sense, but okay. Mm-hmm. But sadly, location matters. It sucks and it really shouldn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, sadly, location matters, and whether that's finding hospitals or, like, you and I are doing, finding colleges to go to.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It stinks, and mm-hmm. sadly, my experience has only been coincidental because I live in an area with good sleep medicine, but, like, that's not everybody, mm-hmm. and I could have been somewhere else, and uh-huh. my story would be different, which sucks. It should mm-hmm. not be that way. But that's just the lay of the land right now, and mm-hmm. we need to do something about it.
Yeah, and like, just like, yeah, as you said, like the area you live in, I know like some like urban areas may have like more hospitals than like a different part of the country, and I just feel like that's like really unfair because like you're a patient, you should be getting like treatment, it should be accessible, because, like, I think, like, our healthcare system is, like, one of the best healthcare access in the world. But sometimes I feel like, especially for rare disease patients, it could be, like, really hard to get a doctor that meets their needs or knows about their condition. And, like, just going off that, like, I can't even think about, like, people in parts of the world where, like, healthcare, society, and economic conditions present even more hurdles for these patients to get, just, like, get basic emergency care for their conditions.
Yeah, it's fascinating to, I mean, most of the people I've interviewed, and I'm assuming most people you've interviewed as well, are U.S. patients. Mm-hmm. I have interviewed a couple international patients, though, one from Canada, one from Australia, and it's fascinating to hear about their... There are really good aspects about the Australian healthcare system because mm-hmm. it's technically like universal and free, but the like their equivalent to disability insurance is so hard to get, uh-huh. and also doctors like don't know, like they're still in like the Freudian psychology era of medicine, and like that was 100 years ago, child. Like
mm-hmm.
we are past that now. Mainly from the story of I learned from the patient from Australia, but there are a lot of downsides to the U.S. healthcare system. I mean, repealing Obamacare, that was a whole thing trying to happen, which shouldn't be because mm-hmm. everybody should yeah. be getting healthcare.
Uh-huh.
It's like nobody right now knows how to sell healthcare, and if they do, they should be speaking up and saying something, and I think the world would stop for a second. And, like, stop moving for a split second because somebody solved healthcare. But, like, no country has it perfect, which mm-hmm. stinks. But we can all, like, branch off each other. And I think in the UK, the way it works is I think it's somewhat universal. But the way they do it is they kind of, like, match, like, price match procedures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
From, I think, within England and the UK, and I think when they were in the EU, I think it was, like, within the EU, I think they had, like, a whole price matching system, which is interesting, so you can get, like, the best deal. I may be wrong and just, like, completely butchering that, but I think that's how the UK system works. And I'm like, if the US system was somewhat like that, probably would be a step closer in the right direction, but I'm not a policymaker. I'm not a healthcare professional, so it's hard when you put trust into those politicians who don't have these conditions, but it's still a work in progress, and places like Every Life, like you mentioned, are doing awesome things. So we're getting there. We're not there yet.
Yeah, and, like, Every Life is definitely making a lot of progress from what I've seen, like, in the legislation side of things. So I think that's great work happening right there. And then, so what you said about, like, different countries and different healthcare systems, I just wanted to bring up. So I actually interviewed this patient who was in India. And she was, like, talking about how, for her rare condition, like, she needs a wheelchair and stuff. So she was, like, it took me, like, so many years to get accommodations, for, like, my disability. And, like, I wasn't able to go back to school for so many years because of that. And I just think it's something that should be, like, more recognized and, like, it shouldn't take, like, multiple years to get, like, disability accommodations, because I just think that's, like, something really important. And if they're, like, pushing back their education for just, like, waiting for these disability accommodations, I think, like, it really needs to speed up. And she was, like, COVID was, like, such a good time for me because I got to stay home and do my education from home, so... Yeah, and I feel like for a lot of rare disease patients, like, COVID could be beneficial, but also, like, kind of, like, disconnected because they were, like, with their own self. But then also, like, our Odyssey and all these organizations are doing amazing things to help foster these connections and keep connections alive through all these meetups and stuff. So, yeah, but I could see how, like, lockdown was really beneficial for some patients, especially those who were, like, not getting what they needed in their education or job environment.
Yeah, and I feel like the way, especially last summer, like, summer of 2020, was definitely a year mainly with all of the social unrest in the country following the death of George Floyd, and the amount of information and things I learned about stuff like racism and unknown, quote-unquote, like, not really heard of instances of things like what happened to George Floyd that aren't broadcast like his was. And that's just, like, a different example. But, like, people repost Instagram posts all the time. I do it on my rare disease podcast Instagram. But, like, I learned so much. And I feel like that's how a lot of people realized maybe there's something that I need to do to change myself. And, I mean, I feel like you and I took it upon ourselves, like, hey, why not just join it? Because, like, Instagram is free, and education is not, and the Instagram education, not saying you should, like, quit school and, like, learn everything about the world from Instagram, probably not the smart move, but, like, if you're following the right people, or you have... or have classmates or friends who are just very politically active, like, especially with things about Palestine and how to voice your opinions on that and what's going on in Afghanistan. Like, I've learned so much, and I think the disability community is just hopping right on that. And just the, yes, we consume a lot of information in general. Sometimes it's not good. Sometimes it's very unhealthy. I mean, look at my screen time. It's not good. I mean, I'm a teenager, what do you expect? But, like, it can be bad. But more often than not, I've learned something. And I know teachers are like, what? You learned from Instagram? And it's like, you would be surprised. Like, there was one post I came across the other day where it was on somebody's Instagram story, reposting it. And it was somebody trying to simplify the situation in Afghanistan. And I finally understood it. Like, I knew what was going on. But, like, at a base level, explaining it to, like, you're explaining it to a 10-year-old. Like, it's, and it puts it even into even more perspective. And same with the disability community. And I don't know. I think we're doing great things. But it's the fact that Instagram with their new, like, privacy-sensitive content setting on Instagram, disability education posts aren't reaching the people that it needs to, which mm-hmm. stinks.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. It's a simple switch, but people don't know.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's an interesting environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like Instagram over, like, the past year has become, like, a lot more informational. Like, not saying it's going away from, like, personal, like, posting and stuff. But, like, I feel like a lot more people are, like, reposting stuff, what's happening in the world. And people are overall just becoming more educated citizens on current events. And stuff like that. So I've really seen that, like, shift over the past year. I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, I think it's a shift in a direction that's proving that social media isn't all bad. It mm-hmm. can be bad if you're not on the right stuff, if it's affecting your mental health negatively, that's different. But like, Instagram and YouTube and Twitter can be used for good.
Uh-huh.
And I think the past, like, 18 months have proven that, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a little break, and then we'll get back to the rest of the episode with Shivani. And we are back. So, Shivani, what was your first advocacy experience like?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So, my first step that I really took in the Rare community was really creating my podcast and elevating people's voices, because I knew I wanted to provide, like, a platform for people to share their stories and stuff, and just feel heard and understand that they're not the only one going through this. There are other people out there. There is, like, a really strong community out there. And I also, like, personally, I started talking to my friends about this cancer and really helping people get educated on what it is. And just, like, overall educating people around me about my grandmother's condition. And although this may seem like a really small step, I really truly believe that the smallest steps really make the biggest difference. And just educating one more person really makes a difference, because next time they come across this cancer, they'll know, like, what it is. So, yeah, just educating people was, like, really the first step, and also creating my podcast. I also started looking at resources of different major rare disease organizations, like All Stripes. There's a whole list of resources I can name, but just, like, all these major organizations. And so, yeah, so now I'm now, like, cross-podcasting and cross-blogging through these different organizations to share my thoughts on, like, common topics in the rare disease community, as well as sharing my grandmother's story along the way. And I'm also now getting in really into the legislative side of things, like pushing for legislation, as I mentioned, through the Every Life Foundation. And just, like, really educating myself on the legislation, the current legislation, past legislation that's been passed, how this legislation is affecting rare disease patients and caregivers. So those were, like, really my first steps into the rare disease community. And from then, it's been a really great experience. Like, I've met so many new people, heard so many different stories, and it's really great to, like, hear that you're not alone on this journey. And there's just this really large community supporting you. So, yeah, it's just been a really great journey from then.
That's amazing. And honestly, that is awesome what you're doing. That's fascinating. And I don't know. These rare organizations are just, they have a soft spot in my heart because they're doing such great work.
Mm-hmm.
I think All Stripes posted today that their, like, Series B fundraiser raised, uh-huh. like, 50 million or something like that?
Yeah.
5 million? 50 million? Something in the millions. Yeah. And I'm like, that's insane. I didn't realize that many people with that much money was going to go towards rare disease research. That's impressive. Like, I was jawed at the floor, like, in shock. I'm still in shock. I saw it, like, 20 minutes ago. I'm in shock. But It's crazy. It's all insane, and the progress is awesome, and it's with people like you and like me that this progress is all happening, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And speaking of your advocacy, go ahead.
Yeah, and I feel like people, like, although they don't realize it, they are really making a huge impact. Like, even, like, sharing your story, like, that's the first step you take. Like, a patient actually comes to mind. She was, like, the first, she took the first step in the advocacy space, like, on my podcast as being a guest. And, like, just a couple months later, she's, like, grown so much in the space, become, like, a really known person, patient in the advocacy space. She's been on, like, many different blogs, stuff like that. So it's, like, really interesting to see, like, their growth and the, like, numerous steps they're taking to further themselves as an advocate. And I know one thing a lot of patients do, or for their, like, young ones who have rare conditions, they fund, like, these clinical trials. They have these fundraisers that, as you said, like, all stripes. There's another one I know of, and they've raised, like, $2.5 million. And their mission is to really, like, fund this clinical trial to find a cure for this condition. And I know, like, over the past, like, couple of months, they found so many more patients from all over the world who are having similar symptoms, and have this condition. So just working towards, like, these clinical trials and, yeah, so I just feel like, no matter, like, how small you think your impact is, it really is making a big impact, and sharing your story is definitely one of the things that makes a huge impact in the community.
Oh, for sure, for yourself and for others, because mm-hmm. if you don't share your story, nobody's gonna know what to do, mm-hmm. and then if you do, they know your needs, and they learn something out of it, and they might be affected by it, which is awesome. That's the beauty of advocacy, I feel like, especially self-advocacy, for sure.
Yeah, and I feel like there are so many, like, options, like, for example, like, say you're not, like, comfortable with maybe, like, sharing your story through a podcast, there's also, like, blogs, websites, like, there's just so many options, and I just feel like there's something for everyone. Like, if you're a more vocal person, maybe attend a meetup, to chat with people, stuff like that, or be on a podcast, but, like, if you're not quite ready to share your story through that medium, you might, like, write a blog post. I just feel like awareness is a really important step in an advocacy journey.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Speaking of your journey, what made you want to start your podcast, and how has that podcasting experience been so far?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I would really say that, like, my main motive for launching the Rare Disorder podcast in March of 2020 was to really bring awareness and to give rare disease patients a voice and a platform to share their story. I really wanted to bring about a change and spread awareness for these rare diseases and also elevate the voices and stories of fighters fighting these conditions. And then one other thing I really wanted to do was provide easy access to resources for patients, because this really goes back to, like, my personal connection. My family, like, really didn't feel supported by the resources and stuff. This was before all these major organizations came into play, but, I just wanted to really help provide easier access for resources. And just drawing upon statistics, so I know today's statistics say that 1 in 10 people have a rare disease in the United States, and this is, like, really quite, like, surprising to me, because I still believe that awareness is still greatly needed, and if you think about it, like, 1 in 10 is a lot of people. It's not, like, not a lot, but, like, I feel like awareness could be, like, more expanded and stuff like that. And I really wanted to let patients know that they are not alone, and I really wanted to encourage more people to advocate for themselves. So just about my, like, starting on my podcast, stuff like that, To be honest, like when I started last year with my podcast, I really didn't know whether to create like a podcast, blog, or other medium. Like all I really knew was that I really wanted to help patients and give them a platform to share their story. But I ended up deciding on a podcast because I really thought like it offers that more personal connection, and really makes the patient feel special opposed to like a blog or a website, where I may be like just paraphrasing what they said. So yeah, just being from their point of view and really offering them that like special connection, to share their story.
That's amazing. I don't know. I think you're doing amazing work and you've reached so many people so far and it's awesome. I love what you're doing.
Thank you. And then just about like my experience since I started the podcast, it's been like really amazing and it's just been really, really important to me. And while I'm helping patients share their stories, I've truly felt like so supportive and inspired, as I continue my advocacy journey as well. Like I've discovered all these major organizations. I've made like so many new friends through this community. And as I said earlier, it's just such a positive and uplifting atmosphere. And so it's just been a really great journey. And then one thing that like really has stood out to me like on this journey is, as I interview numerous patients, just hearing different stories of patients who have like the same diagnosis, from like completely different angles. Like for example, through my podcast, I've interviewed like two patients with Clove syndrome and it affects like totally different parts of their body. Their stories are totally different and it's just like really interesting because, just seeing it from two different perspectives, like in some people it can be more severe and other people can be less severe and seeing how it affects their day-to-day life. They had like totally different like diagnosis stories. It's just crazy because everyone's journey is unique and I'm just always learning more from all these people I've met and all these connections I've made. And as I said earlier, just like seeing people's growth in the advocacy space, what things they're doing, how much like they can do in such a short amount of time, really like inspires me, as a podcaster in this community.
Yeah, people are doing such amazing things. It's almost hard to keep up, but like in a good way. And there's so many things going on and it's all for good. None of it's for like selfish reasons. I feel like we all are doing it for, we all have selflessly reasons in mind. Which is awesome. That's really hard to find in a community of millions of people. So I love that we all have that in common.
Yeah, and I feel like it kind of gives off this like we're all in this together like kind of vibe, like you're not the only one, like we're in this together, and like no one's judgmental, anything like that, like yeah. So I just like really love the community.
Sure. Yeah. It's hard not to. Like, there's not a bad thing about it. It's hard to find. What is something you want people to know about advocacy as someone who doesn't have a rare disease? Because most rare disease advocates have a condition. But what do you want people to know when you put on that advocacy hat, even though you don't have a rare disease?
Yeah, so I think it's really important for people to know that, like, even if you don't have, like, a rare disease yourself, that doesn't mean you can't get involved, that you cannot step into the advocacy space. Because I know, like, there's so many opportunities out there for patients with rare diseases, but also, like, there are all these wonderful organizations. There's all these opportunities to still get involved, even if you don't have a rare disease yourself. Like, for example, like, attending our Odyssey meetups on, like, supporting someone with a rare condition, just educating yourself on, like how it is to be a caregiver to someone with a rare condition. And I feel like there's just always more to learn. So yeah, even if like you don't have a rare disease yourself, you can like totally still advocate, and like just even the smallest actions can make it make the biggest difference, as I said. Connection is like so important. Connection is really like a coping mechanism for many patients in the community. I've talked to many patients and they're like, yeah, my coping mechanisms definitely are like my family, friends, the community. So connection is so important. Support is out there. That is something I really want people to know. Just take the first step, and there are definitely people who understand what you're feeling. Even though you might think you're going through like the worst thing ever, I know that there's like someone out there who understands how you feel. And if you ever feel alone, like, don't be afraid to reach out. And yeah, so that's just like some things I wanted people to know for both like rare disease patients, and then also like if you're not a rare disease patient, you can still advocate for your family member, or yeah.
Of course. And like, yeah, advocacy does not discriminate. And also neither do rare conditions. You can be however old or however young you are. Neither advocacy nor rare diseases discriminate. It's mm-hmm. all a welcoming community. And honestly, the more advocates, the better. And it's honestly, for the grand scheme of things, this may sound really bad, but the more advocates we have who don't have conditions, the more people we're going to get to understand, because people who don't understand are people who, not you in particular, you're very understanding, the you of the 7 billion mm-hmm. people on this earth, the people who don't understand are people who don't have these conditions, because they can't relate. Mm-hmm. Again, not you, you're great at it, don't worry. But, like, there are people who can't be convinced are more likely in that category, and the more advocates we get in the non-stable, non-rare disease space, the better, because it's gonna, you can reach more people that way.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with that. I know, like, before, like, I educated people and, like, my friends on, like, some of my friends listen to my podcast, so they, like, learn about these conditions, and they're like, yeah, I never knew about that, like, before I listened to your podcast, I never knew, like, people went through things like this, and they really, like, sympathize, like, it must be so tough, like, to be, like, one of 50 in the world that has that condition, because, like, finding a doctor must be so hard, and finding people who understand and stuff. So, yeah, I really think, like, even if you don't have a rare condition, don't, like, step back from becoming an advocate. Or, like, if you're not becoming an advocate, at least, like, try to educate yourself on these different conditions and stuff you can do in this space.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So Shivani, what are your hopes for the future? As we mentioned before, Shivani and I are both seniors in high school, so college application season, which is so fun and totally not stressful. I hope you can hint the sarcasm in my voice to all my listeners out there. But Shivani, what are your hopes for the future, whether it's college, career, dreams for your podcast and goals you have, your advocacy journey? What does Shivani's future look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. So podcast wise, I really wish for my podcast reach to grow exponentially, like just reaching more people, not only patients, but also people outside the rare disease community. So more people are getting educated. So yeah, the growth of my podcast is one thing. I really want to impact patients' lives in terms of their access to information, resources, and research. I'm actually, like, currently working on a project to put like all these resources, like the main resources, in one document for patient easy access, just so it's easier. And because I know like sometimes it can be really overwhelming, like seeing all these different organizations. So just like grouping them into what specifically does what. So yeah, increasing access to resources, stuff like that. I would also like to partner with like organizations focusing on patient advocacy. And I want to be involved in like shaping future legislative agenda and really like directing research dollars to advance cures. So getting involved in the legislation side of things is definitely one of my goals. Prior to immersing myself in this community, like legislation wasn't like I wasn't really interested in that, but ever since like learning about all these acts and all this amazing work that different advocates are doing, I've really become interested in this side of things. And then just one last thing about my podcast, I would really like to speak about like these initiatives, trends, and the really the need to come together as a community at upcoming conferences, and even like meetups, stuff like that. I would like to speak on these topics.
Mm-hmm. That would be awesome. Yeah. Guest speaker Shivani Vines. Like, that would be so cool. It'd be so cool. I don't know.
Thank you. All right, and then so like academically in college, I'm really interested in public health and policy. As I said earlier, my like interest really shifted over the past year. I've always been interested in like the business side of things too, like entrepreneurship, that type of stuff. So maybe like minoring in that might be an interest for me. I'm still deciding. I'll see like when I get to college and stuff like that. But I want to go to like a research institution that really brings my interests together and helps me contribute to the field in a meaningful way, because I've always been into like research and that type of stuff, like especially since the podcast. I've been every like episode I like research the condition just so like to educate myself on what they're going to be talking about, and I also give like a brief overview prior to the interview with the patient. So I've really like gotten into researching and learning a lot, and I just like really like doing like self-directed research projects like these. So yeah, and I definitely intend to continue my involvement with the podcast at a much higher level as I continue to finish my senior year and beyond, entering college and maybe even beyond that. So yeah, that's just kind of an overview of like hopes for my future and with advocacy and stuff like that.
That would be awesome. That's amazing. You're gonna do amazing work. Like no matter where you go, no matter what you do, you're gonna do great. Don't worry.
Thank you.
Of course. My final question, as always, my listeners know, why do you want to share your story?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. I kind of touched upon this in previous questions. But I just like really want people to know that like whatever they're going through, they're not alone. Because I know like especially during the past year, like it's been really difficult. And we've seen like a rise in like mental health problems and stuff like that. And I know like especially with patients with rare diseases, usually in a lot of patients I've seen like mental health problems along with their rare condition. And I think I'm really like passionate about like mental health advocacy as well, because just like whatever you're going through, you're not alone, and there's always people out there that understand. Everyone has hard days and those days will pass. That feeling is temporary, it will pass. And then as I said before, like if you don't have a rare disease yourself, that doesn't mean you can't advocate. You can't advocate for family members or friends who have rare conditions. Yeah, so those are just some things that really inspire me to share my story. And then also, like, I feel like I've learned so much, like, ever since starting my podcast. I really want to share this information I've learned with other people. Because all these organizations I've been part of have shared this information with me. So I really want to pass it on to different people and take what I've learned and put it to good use by educating other people and informing them on what I've learned through my experiences and research ever since starting this.
That's amazing. I those are all amazing ways and amazing reasons to share your story. And again, you're doing it pretty well, pretty darn well. I love what you're doing, like I've said thousands of times already. But honestly, just keep doing what you're doing, because the more people who hear what you have to say, the better. Especially as someone who doesn't have a rare disease and is an advocate, like, everybody's connected to the community in some way, whether it's now or in the future. I mean, there's somehow somebody's connected. So I think your story is definitely a more tangible way of, not saying like actual rare disease stories aren't, but like knowing someone is probably more likely than someone having a rare disease, just with the odds stacked against the rare disease community. But yeah, your story is definitely a connection to the rare disease patient, probably more relatable is what I'm trying to say. And you use that to your advantage, and I think that's amazing. And you're using it for good too. So just keep doing what you're doing, and I don't know, all the good things will come. So
yeah, thank you.
Of course.
Go ahead. Wait.
Oh. Is there anything else you want to share with the listeners out there before we wrap up?
Just like one thing. I know you guys have been waiting for us to like collaborate for so long now, like RS for Rare and the Rare Disorder podcast, and there will be actually like more episodes coming soon. That'll be a surprise, but for now, thank you for listening, and it was such a pleasure being on the podcast today, Annie. So thank you for inviting me.
Of course. Thank you for helping make this collaboration possible. I'm so excited. And yes, there will be more episodes in the future with the two of us, so be prepared. Be sure to subscribe to both of our podcasts. And yeah, just a little, go follow the Rare Disorder podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And I also did an episode with Shivani, so it should be over there, which is exciting. So go give her a follow. Go follow her on Instagram at the RD podcast. Her theme is just so beautiful. How could you not follow? And it's just, you post all the good stuff, and it's so great. So go follow her on Instagram as well. And she also like has her little link tree with her resources. So you're doing great stuff, Shivani.
Thank you. Yeah. And like, shout out to you too. Like, I love your podcast. And I feel like the topics you bring up, like with your interviews and stuff like that, are just so like interesting, and like seeing all these different perspectives. And yeah, your feed is also beautiful. Like, I love the orange, like white theme that's happening.
Thank you. But yes, go follow Shivani on Instagram, and she'll definitely be expanding. I don't know how, I don't know where, but I definitely see it coming in the future. I don't know. Maybe she is, maybe she's not. But go follow her, go subscribe to the Rare Disorder podcast, go check out my episode over there. And yes, we're doing more episodes together in the future, so stay tuned. Just a little thank you to Shivani for coming on the podcast. To all my listeners out there, be sure to subscribe to RS for Rare on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow me on Instagram, RS for Rare Podcast. And while you're there, go follow Shivani at the RD Podcast. Thank you guys all for listening, and we'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.